Hello, this is Vincent from with Dina Sean Kirk's Talk Popsy, and I'm here today with
Miriam
to speak about censorship.
Okay. Yeah.
What do you think about censorship?
It's bad.
It's bad? Yeah? Okay, good, good. Yeah, so some things that have come up is, right, every conversation we have, when we have conversations online at least,
right,
not only leave the realm of being private, mm-hmm. but they also are sort of permanent. So they're, mm-hmm. you know, as global as possible because they're on the internet.
Right.
And also they're there as a record.
Yeah. It's sort of stunting because, for example, you might have been like a jerk in high school and made a racist comment and learned from that and then grew and became a different person. And then 20 years later, someone digs this up and then that's like, you know, it becomes like, this is you. Whereas mm-hmm. like, no, that's not you. That's you as a kid.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, so like, think about, right, people before the age of YouTube were able to make mistakes, and their mistakes were just let go to the to the waves of history.
Yeah.
Whereas now.
Yeah.
Not.
No, the cancel culture. And you know what? I think before censorship was like seen as something that the conservatives did, the right wing, like, oh, like, you know, censoring like literature. Mm-hmm. That's too progressive or communist or like anti-Christian, but now it's like a lot of the censorship is coming from the left as well, right? It's like our people, so to speak, I know, it's very illiberal, like intrinsically.
Yeah, I could
see
this.
There's no space to like discuss ideas.
So maybe it's like a value of, like, a liberal ideal that we should be able to speak about ideas, reject them, speak about them.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just feel like, I think I've tried to be that person. I'm of a generation where I'm like kind of right in the middle, where like I'm part of that sort of like social justice warrior cohort, but I'm a little like older. So I'm like, I don't know. I felt like I was like willing to challenge it, but in spaces with that kind of ethos, you just get like overpowered, you know. And now when I have those kinds of conversations, it's in private. It's like with people who like think like me, and that's not very constructive. You know, be able to have like dialogue for the sake of like, even disagreement, you know, but it's kind of exploring an idea or whatnot, and there's no space for that, really.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's another thing that came up previously was that, you know, there was this space for people to explore an idea,
mm-hmm.
you know, think about it, toy with it, and then reject it and move on from it.
Right.
But if everything one says is forever tied to their name,
right,
maybe we lose that.
Right. And some of it, like you can't come from a place of honest inquiry. It's like, oh, look, what about this or what about that? It's always like, it just gets shut down really early, you know? I've had a few examples like that. I'm sure we all have.
Yeah, I mean, as one, very interesting. Did you have something else on that? I'm sorry.
No.
Cool, well, what about, what do you think about self-censorship? So do you think in, for example, stuff like this,
mm-hmm.
you've learned to, I mean, as you said, you've learned to not repeat or not ask certain questions in certain spaces.
For sure. Because it's unforgivable, right? So it becomes like a means of self-protection, which I think on a societal level will be very problematic. It's just like any kind of, so for example, like, you know, like I used to live in Africa, and I was living in Malawi, and we would sometimes buy like local fabrics and have dresses made for like it's just kind of like economic. It was hard to find a nice dress to wear for an occasion there, and like nice idea, like supporting local artisans was nice. And so I had some like dresses made in like traditional African fabrics. Like I had to go check if African wedding, like a Malawian wedding, and so I wore one of those, whatnot. That sort of thing. When I went to a village, I had to take long dresses, like long skirts made, which, like, you know, were kind of necessary because you want to dress a little more like concert, like a, you know, conservative, like, I can't say that word. Conservatively. In the villages, whatnot. And so just kind of, yeah, it's pragmatic and it's also sort of like, yeah, in some ways, like, cultural appreciation, right? But that kind of became like, turned into being cultural appropriation. And I remember I was like, just a different part of Africa, I was in Tanzania, and I was having this conversation with a friend, and like, she basically shut it down from the very beginning. She's like, well, no, it's like, that's, you know, cultural appropriation. And like, and she referred to a very specific example, which is of the Maasai people in Kenya, and they have these very specific fabrics that have like a lot of symbolic meaning. And she said people go around wearing those, and that's, you know, exploitive. And that's, and I'm like, okay, well, yeah, but those fabrics mean a specific thing for a specific community. That doesn't, in my name, translate to people feel about Malawian fabrics. And like, in fact, I asked my Malawian friends, and they said, we love it. We love it. We love it. It seems to support your culture. And like, you know, but she just shut me down. And I was actually willing to kind of like explore that idea and like, you know, what's appropriate, what's not, where is that line? And like also kind of wanted to, and I didn't talk to my Malawian friends until after the fact, but I wanted to kind of like bring them into the conversation, but there's no space for that. And it's just like me even mentioning, bringing up a topic made me a cultural appropriator and like someone who is in the wrong. And it's like those kinds of things where you can't really like explore that topic and like what's that balance between cultural appreciation, cultural appropriation, for example, you know. But but like I have so many examples where just like there's nothing, and it just, you know. And it, and also I think the thing is because she's also had other people who were like allied with her, and I think it's like this whole, the notion that like how strongly you feel about something correlates to your outreach. So you don't really, you're not really of true conviction if you're not like going to respond and like just like with the sense of outrage, you know. And that's like, yeah.
That's a lot. Yeah.
It's a lot. No, yeah.
Yeah, that seems very frustrating because it precludes the opportunity to get any nuanced sort of view.
Right.
On the sort of topic. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, surely there's got to be a difference between cultural sharing and cultural appropriation, right?
Right,
like there's
right.
There's obvious, I mean, everyone can think of examples that are kind of obviously bad, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's clear examples of that, but I mean,
right.
In a globalized world, it seems like cultural sharing is sort of inevitable.
Right.
So,
and we have some merit too. And yeah. It's like, we're like, there's, yeah.
Yeah.
How do you acknowledge like the bad and the wrong and respect, kind of be respectful of that, but at the same time like allow for some exchange? And yeah, I don't know. But anyways.
Well, fascinating stuff. Thank you so much. Thank you for talking with
me. Yeah, thank you for the conversation.